Welcome to the Holidays to Switzerland Travel Podcast. Your host is the founder of holidaystoswitzerland.com and the Switzerland Travel Planning Facebook group, Carolyn Schonefinger. On this podcast, Carolyn will be joined by a variety of guests who share their knowledge and love of the country to help you plan your dream trip to Switzerland.
Welcome to episode 28. Whether this is the first time you've tuned in or you're a regular listener, it's great to have you here. Thanks so much for joining me on the Holidays to Switzerland Travel Podcast. Switzerland may be a small country, but there are so many fantastic destinations and things to see and do that I keep discovering new topics to share with you. I've been having a lot of fun lately recording episodes, and there are some really interesting episodes coming up, so make sure you subscribe on your favourite podcast app. Today's guest is Kristen Reinhardt, an Australian who spent her gap year in Switzerland and is still there today, some 18 years later. That's a pretty long gap year, Kristen. Kristen created the website Swiss Family Travel, where she and a group of English-speaking writers provide an insider's guide to Switzerland. She has recently rebranded the website and will learn more about her new baby in this episode. As well as telling us about moving to Switzerland, Kristen is also going to give us an insight into life in Switzerland with a family and share her favourite family-friendly places to visit. As someone who frequently daydreams about living in Switzerland, I can't wait to hear all her nuggets of information. Welcome to the podcast, Kristen. Thank you very much for joining me today.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure.
Great. Well, can you start by telling us a bit about your background? You've obviously got an Aussie accent. So how did you end up in Switzerland?
Yeah, that's right. I was born and bred in Brisbane, well, actually Redcliffe, just north of Brisbane. After high school, I started university and wasn't 100% sure if the path I was on was the right one, so I wanted to take a break. And so I thought about different options, and finances were a bit of a problem. I didn't have money to travel. So I thought, okay, what's the one way of being able to get to Europe? And that was to work. So I found I saw an au pair advertisement in the back of the courier mail. And from there, that sent me down a rabbit hole. I'd never heard of an au pair before. And so it sent me on a rabbit hole and found all these different options to become an au pair in Europe. And at first I thought London was the easy option. I speak English and that's where pretty much every Australian goes for their gap year. And I thought a friend of mine, parents, friends who were expats, said, why London? Everyone goes there. So why not try somewhere where you don't know the language and don't know the culture and give it a go to expand your horizons a bit? And so I took on their advice, took England off my search criteria of my online au pair profile, bearing in mind this is 2001, where finding jobs on the internet wasn't as normal it is today. And I just clicked all of Western Europe, so Switzerland, France, Italy, Germany, Austria. Well, not all, but most of them. And I almost landed with a family in southern Switzerland, actually, near Geneva, but that fell through at the last minute. And another family near Basel picked me up and asked if I would come and work for them. And I, after a phone call and a couple of letters backwards and forwards and emails, we decided that, yeah, it would be a good choice. So I hopped on a plane, deferred university, hopped on a plane and landed in a tiny little town near Basel with 400 people, me being the only one who didn't speak Swiss German, and to look after two kids for a year.
Wow. So the initial placement was for 12 months. Is that right? Right?
Yep, that's right.
But obviously something happened and you ended up staying a bit longer than 12 months. Yeah. What happened next?
Well, after the first getting over homesickness, I was very homesick for the first 3 months. I fell in love with Switzerland, and When the mother unfortunately fell ill, she asked if I would stay on another 6 months so they didn't have to find a new au pair. And I agreed and deferred my university another 6 months. And on the day I was supposed to fly home, I met my husband, well, now husband, through a friend in German class. She invited me to the lakeside town of Zug, which is right in the middle of Switzerland. And there was a big party going on. Zug turned 700 years old. And while her husband was working as a chef in a restaurant, she said, well, why don't you come with me and we can enjoy the festivities. And that night, after her now husband, then boyfriend, got off work, we met up with him at this the lake in Zug, and the whole town was closed and there was just this big party atmosphere. And that's where I met my husband, who's the brother of my friend's work colleague.
That's a great story. So you've obviously ended up, you now live in Zug. So for those listeners that aren't familiar with the city, can you give us a bit of a geography lesson and tell us whereabouts in Switzerland it is?
Yeah, absolutely. So after 18 months, I moved to Zug, and I live in a village just outside Zug. So Zug is also a city, but also a canton, so like a state in Australia. It's a really small. It's only about, I looked this up for you, 238 square kilometres. So it's not very big at all. You can drive from one to the other in half an hour. And it's also a city. And what used to be a sleepy farming town, popular with to grow cherries, and has become a really lively international community with many international companies calling Zug home. So it's a very huge contrast, and sometimes a little bit of a bubble, because there are, you can get stuck behind a tractor on the main road in Zug, but you can also get stuck behind a Maserati. And so there's this quite a big contrast, but also with the big expat community through these companies. Glencore is here, Siemens is here, Johnson & Johnson, just to name three off the top of my head. So there's a big international community. So it's an interesting place to live. So I never really felt that I was too isolated from English, or if I needed a dose of English, there was always someone I could find to connect with. But at the same side, there is still a great culture here in Zug, and that I love all the traditions. So it's also based on the lake, with just at the foot of the Alps. So the Alps kind of like extend past us, and so we can see from Zug beautiful sunsets with sun setting over the mountains. And it's a really beautiful place to call home.
Stop it. You're making me very jealous. So I guess, like you just mentioned, you can always find someone to speak English in Zug. But when you were living in or just out of Basel, did you find it hard at first to sort of integrate into the community? Was that difficult?
Well, yeah, absolutely. So no one, I think there was one lady in the village who really spoke English other than the family that I was living with. And so I really didn't integrate into the community too much, except through the kids the kids I looked after. So I would take them to kindergarten or playgroup or to the local mum and kid gym, even with all the local mums. And that way it was a little bit difficult. And it was a family town, so there weren't very many people my age. So I connected at the beginning with most of the people in my German class that were in Basel. So I had to take a yellow post bus that finished at 8 or 9 o'clock at night to the next train station and take a train into Zug to get to German class. And that way is where I started to meet people. But at first it really was mostly people in the same situation as I was. Maybe English wasn't their first language, but it was always the language language of the common language. Mm-hmm. And then as I moved to Zug and met my husband and integrated into his family, it became a lot easier. In Zug, it's really hard to integrate because it's easy to find someone to connect with. You're not forced to speak the language, which has positives and negatives. Great for the beginning, but eventually, if you really want to integrate into the community, it's very difficult.
Yeah, sure.
And so it took me a while, and what really helped me was learning German, learning Swiss German, which is completely different to German, which makes it already hard to learn the local language because the locals don't like to speak in German. They prefer their natural dialect. Mm-hmm. And the biggest step for me of integrating was not my husband, actually, but it was taking the brave step of joining a local Verein, which is different clubs. Every village has so many different clubs to join, and you just find your hobby and you can find a club to join. I first joined the local choir, and through that joined the local women's club, not an international one, but really the local village women's club. And through that, the locals then realized, she's invested in us and wants to help out and wants to join in. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden I had locals waving to me on the street and stopping to chat and coming up to me and say, oh, I'm really glad you are helping out now. And that really integrated me into the village. And then I really started to feel at home.
Yeah, good. So now you've got a couple of children. Mm-hmm. You've obviously made your life there in Zug. Talking about languages, and you're saying how, you know, you, because there's so many English speakers around, you're not forced to speak Swiss German all the time. How do you go with your children? Do you speak to them in English and your husband in Swiss German, or do you both sort of speak both languages to them? Do you have a bit of a rule, or how does
Can we call it complicated? my husband works also for an international company, and so he also speaks English at work. So while Swiss German is his mother tongue, he finds it also easy to slip into English. I, in the meantime, have also become fluent in Swiss German, so I also find it easy to flow into Swiss German too. So we are not model parents when it comes to languages, where each parent should speak their mother tongue. However, yes, we have three kids, and with the first two children, we were very conscious about English and German being balanced in our family. And so they went 2 days to Swiss German playgroup, 2 days to English speaking playgroup. But what we realized once they hit school is that their English was so strong and their German suffered more in vocabulary sense than in a grammatical sense. And so with our third, we've just sent her purely to Swiss playgroups and kindergartens and schools. And her Swiss German is perfect, and her vocabulary is much, much better and much more extensive at the same age as our older two. It depends on the situation. We live in the same building as my in-laws and my brother-in-law. So if we're all around together, we all speak Swiss German together. And then I speak Swiss German to the kids because my in-laws don't understand English. However, if we've started an English conversation and my husband joins in, then he'll just jump in with English too. So it's a bit of a mixed match, but it works for us.
Yeah, good. And did the children learn any other languages at school?
Yeah, so it's a big discussion, languages here, because because of the dialect. So they start kindergarten and there's dialect at the kindergarten. They move into first grade and that turns into High German. So even for the local kids, there's new rules to learn, new words to learn. And then because Swiss German and German is not exactly the same. And then from third grade, they learn English, which is always a highlight for my kids because they love being the best in the class in one subject. And then from fifth grade, they learn French. But this is unique to us on our side of, so Switzerland's divided by Italian, German, Romanish, and French. And so it will just depends on what canton you're in and which languages have been approved at school. So I think in like the Canton of Bern, if my memory serves me right, they start with French and then add English in, because their neighboring canton is in French. So French is really important in Bern, whereas French here isn't as important because we're further away. So it only gets introduced in fifth grade.
Okay. So would you regard Switzerland as being a family-friendly country?
Oh, yes, absolutely. Firstly, the Australian in me originally thought it was crazy kids walk to school. I mean, from the ages of 4.5, 5, they're expected to walk on their own to school. And that a community is safe enough for kids to do that already indicates that kids are at the forefront of the community's mentality. So very, very kid-friendly. Family-friendly is a different discussion. So it's very kid-friendly, but kids still come home from school for lunch here. So they're expected to have some parent, which is usually the mother, expected to be home to look after the kids over lunch. This is now changing as the generations grow up. The older generation's mentality was very kid-focused, very kid-friendly. However, now as the generations catch up to the rest of the world, when it comes to work-life balance for parents, more schools offer lunchtime programs, after-school programs, so because more and more both parents work. But it's still a very contentious issue. It's definitely kid-friendly.
That's good to hear. Now, you've got a website called Swiss Family Travel. How did that come about?
Well, it came about because I'm originally a photographer, family photographer, and after I had my third child, I realized that I didn't want to work on the weekends anymore. And I wanted to be home with my kids, and family photo shoots happen on Saturdays. So I started looking for other outlets of ways I could work from home, but still use my photography skills. And then I realized at one stage, someone said to me, or read in a book or heard on a podcast, that you should focus in on what people think you as an expert on. And I had a bit of a think, and what are the questions people always ask me? And it's always about living in Switzerland, traveling in Switzerland, what to do in Switzerland, how to live in Switzerland. And because I'm married Swiss, but an immigrant myself, I've got 2 feet in both worlds. So I understand what it's like to move here, but also understand what it is to grow up here through my husband's and his family's experience. And so then I just started writing about living here and what to do, what to see, and also a little bit of a motivation to get me to see more of the country, because we spent most of the our holidays going back to Australia and visiting family and friends there and not really exploring our own backyard.
So what are some of the favourite places that you like to go with your family and that your kids particularly enjoy?
My kids love my kids don't love hiking anymore, but they used to love coming with us hiking. And I think that is the secret to Switzerland, is my opinion, is to get away from, even in tourist areas, is to find a hiking path and enjoy the nature. It's just, there's just so many yellow signs you can follow to find great views and great playgrounds, and they're very clever to pop a playground on a hiking path to help motivate the kids, and parents can enjoy the view while the kids play, because I'm not a playground parent, so I really appreciate those type of playgrounds. And but they're very clever about adding interesting things onto these hiking paths, be that a themed path, or recently we were in a village called Flims, and they had a water path where we followed little canals, very miniature creek-like canals through the forest. And the kids made boats along the way and let them push boats along the with the current of the stream, and they forgot that they were outdoors walking. And another a huge favorite of theirs is the Herzlisee above Engelberg, and this is a really cute little lake in the shape of a heart. It's a couple of cable cars up in the mountains, and around the lake there is it's called a tickle trail in English, but it's like a sensory trail where you walk in mud and stones and bark and soft sand and into cold water. And my kids just, especially when they were younger, just loved that. And the views up there are just beautiful as well. And then we live close to Lucerne, so like the backup place is always to go visit the transport museum there. They love going there, seeing what's new, and even the older kids, they love going to the planetarium or the IMAX movie, and yeah.
Great. You mentioned before about your background in photography, and I noticed on your website that you actually now have some prints that you sell. So how have you sort of been able to turn that into more of a business, given that you wanted to not have to work weekends?
Well, through the blog, I then was seeing beautiful scenes, and people would often ask me, "Oh, is that print for sale, or will you sell that print?" And so it was kind of the logical next step of being able to bring together the writing and the photography, and then sell the images that I'm capturing when I'm out and about. And I'm not a photographer who often just goes, sits there and waits for the scene to happen. I'm a very much more of a documentary photographer. And while I love landscapes, they're beautiful. I love capturing scenes of a cow who's just happened to have walked past and just see it standing in a solitary in a field, or a chairlift of people with bright ski pants against the white contrast of the white snow. And so I just love photography. It's a part of my storytelling, and it's my first love before writing originally. And so I just love that I'm being able to bring that to my customers, to my readers who are also interested in it, but also I love it for myself too.
Oh, great. And at the moment, are you able to ship those images overseas, or are they only within Europe at the moment?
Currently only in Switzerland. Thank you to the very complicated process that every country seems to at the moment want to import on small businesses shipping around the world. However, the next step is in using Etsy to sell prints internationally and be able to ship those.
Oh, fantastic. So
watch this space.
Yeah, that's something to look out for. Now, talking about watch this space, you did mention to me before we started chatting that you're going to do a bit of a rebranding with your business. So does that mean the end of Swiss Family Travel? And if so, what's coming in its place?
Yes, it does mean the end of Swiss Family Travel, but that's not something to be sad about. It's something to be excited about. And I think by the time we go, this episode goes to air, Swiss Family Travel will have become Snoony. And you may ask, what is Snoony and how do I spell that?
Yes, please.
Well, firstly, Snoony is actually a Swiss German word for a mid-morning snack, so morning tea. And so in Australia, you'll say, have you packed your morning tea? Here you'll say, have you packed your Snoony box? And but it's not just a school thing. Snoony is something that pretty much every Swiss person takes the time to have a break around 9 o'clock. The word Snoony is zu neun, so at nine. And at 9 o'clock, you can expect to see cafes filled with everyone from office workers, mums, dads with strollers, construction workers, painters, gardeners, all sitting around having a break and connecting over their morning break. And we just thought, I now have four writers that write for me, and we felt that we were much more than a travel blog. We were more about the essence of Switzerland, and we want to bring that that essence to the internet. And just like the hygge of Denmark and the Frenchness that people love with French, Switzerland also has this unique look at aspect. And I just love the idea of Znuni. And it's really common. Like if a painter comes to paint your bedroom, he'll come in, he'll set up at punctually at 9 o'clock. He will put his paintbrushes down and leave your apartment. And at first you're like, what's going on? But you then walk across the road to the cafe and he's sitting around a round table with all the other local tradespeople. All together eating maybe a gipfeli, which is like a less buttery croissant, and or maybe some sausages, hot dog sausages called Wienerli, and they're all and having a coffee and just connecting with the local community. And I think that's, at first I thought it was strange. I was like, hang on, you just started an hour ago. How do you need a break? But really, it's a really cool concept and something that I also try to integrate now into my life.
Yeah, and I guess it's a way for the you know local people to integrate or not so much to integrate, but to mingle and to keep in touch with
absolutely.
Others.
And it's about connection, and then that's what we're trying to do with our blog, and trying to help people connect with the community, connect with each other. And so I hope people now take a break at 9 o'clock. Grab a cup of coffee and sit down and read out Znuni.
So when we do that at 9 o'clock, what sort of stories are we going to see on the website?
Well, we've divided the website into 5 categories. So we'll have lots of stories about Swiss stories. So this can be anything from married Swiss stories, which is our most popular series, to people new to Switzerland and things like that. We're also introducing day in the life of what it's like to live in Switzerland from different perspectives. And then we move on to Swiss life and explaining these funny little quirky things like Znuni, or why the Swiss vote 5 times a year in different referendums, to why is it quiet over lunchtime. And then we move on to food, because every culture has a food story to tell, and there are so many stories to tell about food here in Switzerland, from where to eat to how to make the beautiful Zopf, their Sunday bread that is just so delicious. And then we've of course got the Explore, so that's about traveling and exploring Switzerland. And the final is a bit about Swiss lifestyle, about a couple of tips of, we've got gift guides that come out every year with Swiss themed products to purchase, experiences, but also products. We also give photo tips from my experience, book tips, podcast tips. So, yeah.
Oh, sounds wonderful. Excellent. Now, I'm sure over the years you've had many, many visitors and family members that have come to stay. So what experiences do you suggest that anyone who's visiting Switzerland for the first time should enjoy?
Well, I think you have to experience a lake and a mountain. I think those are the two things you should experience when it comes to Switzerland. And yes, there is famous mountains and famous lakes that everyone would suggest to go. But I just think, personally for me, I always take up my family up the Rigi. It's very close by to where we live. You can start in Lucerne, take a boat over, go up the Rigi with the Cog Railway, come down the other side, and then take the train back to Zug. So it's a nice round trip, and from the Rigi you can see beautiful views across the Alps, and also experience Switzerland's beautiful lakes. However, I also am partial to say that I used to not really spend much time in the tourist destinations, so around Berno, but the Bernese Oberland, and but have recently. And I would take my family the next time they come to visit to Mürren, actually, and all that of Brunnen. And I think this is a really unique place because you get to really feel how big the mountains really are. And traveling up and walking above Murren, and there's a great playground up there for kids, amazing views, and you just feel tiny against the Jungfrau and the Eiger, and that feeling you don't actually get when you're on the Jungfrau itself. And I think that's the most amazing feeling that I could experience time and time again. And even I've done this trip with my Swiss family, and even they were taking photos out of the train window.
It's got to be impressive then. Mm-hmm. Okay, so what's the one meal that that anyone coming to Switzerland should try?
Oh, one meal. Oh, dear, this is really tricky. You've got all your
standards.
What's
your favourite?
My favourite, I would suggest people to try the Wurstkäsesalat. And this is, it sounds really funny to have a sausage cheese salad, but it's so delicious. It's cold servola cut up, mixed with salad and mixed with cheese. And then you can also choose to have added with like a salad, different mixed salads. And I think this is just a very unique to Switzerland, and it's a dish you wouldn't necessarily know to try. And I would suggest that. But of course, fondue and raclette, you can't go wrong with those either.
And you have no trouble finding them on the menu either.
Absolutely not.
Wonderful. So where can people find you online? What's the web address or the URL of this brand new website?
Yes. So no longer Swiss Family Travel. So you can find us at snooni.com, which is znuni.com. However, I will say that's not officially the way to spell Snooni. It's usually with an umlaut over the U, which is the two dots, but Google doesn't like umlaut. So it's just z-nuni.com. And you can find us there on the website with links to social media. We're very active on Instagram as well.
Great. Well, I'll put that the name of that, the spelling for those that just missed that, I'll put that in the show notes so people can find those at holidaystoswitzerland.com/episode28. Thank you so much, Kristen. It's been wonderful chatting to you and learning a little bit about life in Zug and what you're up to.
Thanks so much for having me.
Thank you so much for listening. For more great resources on planning a trip to Switzerland, make sure you visit holidaystoswitzerland.com, where you'll find trip planning tips, destination guides, information on transport, including Swiss rail passes, and much more. You're also encouraged to join the Switzerland Travel Planning Group on Facebook, where you can ask questions and chat to other past and future travellers to Switzerland. You'll find show notes from today's episode at holidaystoswitzerland.com/podcast, and be sure to subscribe to the Holidays to Switzerland Travel Podcast so you never miss an episode.